Thank you, Frank, and also want to echo some of the other speakers already today, thanking George Washington University for hosting what has so far been a very informative seminar. And I also would like to point out, being out of Rome, New York, and the fact that we've already gotten about 3 feet of snow in the last week and a half, I'm also very appreciative of any opportunity to travel south from upstate New York. So thank you very much. My presentation is probably going to be a little bit different than the rest of this panel because what I'm going to discuss really isn't so much a system or product capability as much as it is looking at a technology. And what I'm going to talk about is looking at software-defined radio technology and how that might penetrate the public safety market and what the benefits might be. I'll give you a little bit of a background of the perspective that I bring, particularly as chair of the SDR Forum's Public Safety Special Interest Group and what that group has been doing. Talk a little bit about where we see the benefits of software-defined radio technology to the public safety community and how that might impact emergency communication in the future. And then highlight several critical issues that, that are currently being worked in terms of realizing that vision. And then give you just a couple of notes about where we see this all heading. Our activities are actually funded by the National Institute of Justice under their ComTech program. And if you're not familiar with that program, basically they're doing research and development in communications technology, really in support of state and local public safety personnel and first responders. And although it is a federal program, their real focus is on the state and local community of users. And they're looking at a variety of technologies that I've got listed there. What I'll be talking about is primarily the SDR arena and also mention a couple of things in the cognitive radio area as well. For those of you who aren't familiar with software-defined radio, I can give you a definition that the SDR Forum has out on their website. Basically, technologies that enable reconfigurable system architectures for wireless networks and user terminals. More practically speaking, SDR technology is really technology that implements control of the radio operating parameters, such as frequency, modulation type, power, and so on, in software. And of course, that's a bit of a change from the traditional radio technology in which those kinds of operating parameters are handled in hardware. The SDR Forum itself is an international consortium of organizations. It's primarily vendors, manufacturers, and so on, largely pulled together to advance SDR technology. And the forum itself has been around for about 10 years, started in about 1996, and their initial focus was primarily on military applications. Then some of the focus, as they started to bring some of the commercial carriers, cellular companies, and so on. There was more of an interest on the commercial side. But they really didn't take much of a look in terms of the public safety perspective and requirements until Mr. Seifer gave a briefing, I believe it was the 2001 meeting, summer of 2001. And that started to awaken the interest, if you will, from the SDR community about this additional potential market and application domain. And that interest grew over the years to the point where in early 2004 we created a public safety special interest group within the forum. And what's I think interesting about that particular group is the representation includes both public safety organizations, so we have the end users represented in that group, the traditional public safety land mobile radio community, commercial companies, regulators, software developers who haven't done anything specific in the public safety domain but are interested in how this potential application or domain area might evolve in a way that presents a business opportunity to them, and the military and so on. And what this group has been doing over the last year has really been grappling with the question of how is SDR technology going to penetrate the public safety market and what are the issues. Now, the first point that I really want you to take away is that if you go out and buy a public safety radio today from one of the traditional land mobile radio vendors, it is an SDR, and that surprises a lot of people. And I've had people still question, well, when's this technology really going to get in the hands of the community? If folks, it's there. If you think about a public safety radio that you go out and buy and it's flash upgradable and basically has multiple protocols embedded in the system, may have some P25 capability, may have a legacy waveform for a proprietary system, it may have a conventional interface to your national interoperability channels, that's all implemented in software. So the SDR revolution just happened. We just didn't notice it so much. But the problem is, and what the challenge is that what's out there today in SDR provides multiple protocols, but it doesn't provide the kinds of capabilities that we really need to address interoperability problems in public safety. What you have today is still single-band radios. So if you're out there with a VHF radio trying to interface with an 800 megahertz system, you can't do it. So what we're really looking at, and where the real payoff for SDR technology is, I think, for the public safety community, is beyond multi-protocol to get to multi-band radios, multi-service radios, and then that SDR technology that provides tremendous flexibility in the capabilities of the radios lays a foundation for some cognitive applications. I'll talk a little bit about where that payoff might be down the line. What I sometimes characterize as the killer app for interoperability, or for software-defined radio in public safety is interoperability. I think we all know the problem. And the challenge that we have and where we see the SDR capabilities is starting in the multiband area. When we talk about incompatible radio systems, and if you read any of the after-action reports from any of the increasing list of situations in which incompatible radio systems were highlighted as a problem for communication, one of the very fundamental problems is public safety radio systems are built for VHF, for UHF, for 800, and we don't have multiband radios that will work across any one more than one of those bands. And as I mentioned before, if you have a typical VHF system and you're issued a VHF radio and you have to provide mutual aid to an environment where they've got an 800 megahertz system, you can't communicate unless there's some specific capabilities that have been put in place in the infrastructure to do that. And there are very good capabilities that do that, and you'll probably hear about some of those before we're done with this panel. And they've made, under NIJ funding, we've actually piloted some of those. And they're very effective for what they do. But we don't have the capability where if you get on the scene with a radio, if there's not the infrastructure in place to do it, you can't communicate with the incompatible radio systems. But we can take that basic capability of multi-band software-defined radio and extend it beyond just the traditional land mobile radio communications. And that's where we get to the ideas of multi-service radios. If you look at the SAFECOM Public Safety Statement of Requirements, one of the things, if you read through those scenarios, if you look at the vision for public safety communications in the out years, one of the things that will strike you is the fact that there are very highly dynamic networks consisting of not just land mobile radios, but a variety of the communications capabilities and protocols that are needed. And if you talk to the public safety community, what they really would like to, where they really would like to be in somewhere down the road is instead of carrying the land mobile radio, the pager, the cell phone, and not to mention wireless data capabilities, whether they be 802.11, 16, or something else, what they really would like to do is to start to get those combined into some small number of devices that will allow them to communicate the way that they need to across the communication mechanism that they need to for the incident that they're responding to. So interoperability is, as I said, the killer app for SDR, but there's some other potential benefits to the public safety community as well. There's life cycle cost reduction, and one of the reasons, quite frankly, that you see SDR capabilities in the field today is because the manufacturers are doing it because it reduces their cost, and it drops that life cycle cost because it's much easier to upgrade capabilities, it's much easier to reprogram radios, and it simplifies technology upgrades to be able to do this with the flexibility of an SDR rather than having to either exchange or upgrade hardware on the radios or upgrade the infrastructure. And in fact, if we take that concept one step further and look at over-the-air reprogramming, then you actually can simplify the lifecycle cost and the upgrade cost, whereas today you've got to go round up how many ever thousand radios your department has for a large system, for a large agency, and physically touch every one of those if you want to upgrade capabilities. And if you take the SDR paradigm to over-the-air reprogramming, then you could do that very, very simply. And then a third benefit is that SDR lays that foundation for cognitive applications for which we could yield some performance enhancements in the radio. If you have the capability in SDR to manipulate the radio operating parameters on the fly based on the RF environment, you have a tremendous potential to address interference problems on the fly, spectrum loading problems, and so on. So that's a great vision, right? Why isn't there today? What do we have to do to make it happen? Well, there are some technical challenges out there. First off is the software side of this works pretty well, but one of the challenges, especially as you start looking at multiband radios and portable radios, is getting an antenna that's going to work for you at VHF, UHF, and 800. So that's one of the challenges. Another one of the challenges is that the processing that's required to do this is going to put some strain on the size, weight, and power constraints that you have associated with portable devices. There's also challenges in the front-end processing in terms of processing across the wide range of frequency bands that we're talking about. If you're talking about just going from VHF to UHF to 800, you're talking about actually covering about 5 octaves worth of frequency band. And the more octaves that you have, the greater the challenge is in the processing. And then finally, as we start looking at multi-service kinds of capabilities, we're talking about fundamentally different waveforms, going from land mobile radio to Wi-Fi, WiMAX, et cetera. And so that may limit the kinds of modes that can be implemented. Now, these are all issues that are being worked right now. That's why I call them challenges as opposed to obstacles or things that that will preclude getting this technology out in the field. But these are the issues that need to be worked and are being worked to actually realize the vision. Another big issue is security. Now, I mentioned over-the-air reprogramming, and I can tell I'm not in a public, that there's not a lot of actual practitioners out here, because usually when I talk about over-the-air reprogramming, I can see the color drain from their face and the realization that you could actually have radios out there that were subject to all of the kinds of things, security issues that you have when you start talking about being able to manipulate those with some kind of over-the-air capability. So it's really critical to develop the security technology, policies, and procedures to be able to do these kinds of things. So that's a whole nother area that's being worked right now. The other observation that I have about interoperability is as you start to develop security protocols and regimes, one of the other things that you have to be careful of is getting really great interoperability among radios, but not among your security paradigms, so that, yeah, the radios work really well until you secure them, and then they don't work together at all. So it's important to maintain this focus on interoperability as we get into the security discussions. And now the third issue in that standard, and Mr. Bart will probably be very happy to hear that the standards issue here will keep TR-8 churning for a while as we get into some of these critical standards. I want to make one really important observation about public safety communication standards, and it has to do with a comparison to the JTRS program. And early on in the work that we did, one of the questions that always seems to come up is, geez, the military Department of Defense has spent millions of dollars in building the JTRS system. They have this wonderful SCA. They've got a nice standard. Wouldn't that just be the solution for public safety? Well, in addition to the cost issue, one of the points in trying to leverage that technology is this. If you look at public safety radio communication standards in P25, those standards are defined between radios, between devices, between the device and the infrastructure. That's what the common over-the-air interface does. Or between infrastructure, between systems. That's what the ISSI does that's currently being worked out. The JTRS SCA is a standard within a device. Public safety has never dealt with a standard at that level. Now, I won't say whether it should or shouldn't, whether it's a good idea or a bad idea. Raise that in any group of public safety folks, and you'll have an interesting discussion, because even within the community, there's not agreement. And that's not to mention the kind of food fight that you get into if you get vendors in the room together. Because for some vendors, that's a major advantage to put a standard at that level. And for other vendors, it's a major disadvantage. But the point is, that's the critical kind of consideration that needs to be thought through when we start talking about looking at the way JTRS develops standards and what's going to work for public safety. We have had, and the public safety SIG has already broached a conversation with the TIA TR8 folks. In fact, TR8.7 is an SDR subcommittee within TR8. And one of the things we've been doing is apprising that group of what's going on within the public safety SIG. And I think this report will provide TR8.7 with some very interesting material to start to work through as we complete the activity. I mentioned cognitive applications, and one of the benefits there, and I talk about performance enhancement, you know, being able to adjust the waveform parameters to adjust to a dynamic RF environment. For example, in some of the environments that we've worked in, especially as you bring new radios or new capabilities into an existing infrastructure for in a mutual aid kind of response situation, you don't have the luxury of going and tuning the repeater system to accommodate all the radios that are being introduced into the incident response. Those individual radios are going to have to be able to accommodate what the infrastructure is. And so if you start having cognitive capabilities layered over SDR, you start to actually have capabilities where you could do that. One of the things I don't talk about a lot in cognitive applications is spectrum sharing. And I want to make a point about this because if you look at some of the initial cognitive radio work, DARPA XG program, a lot of the motivation for that was spectrum sharing and spectrum efficiency. And from a public safety standpoint, need to be very, very careful about that. I've seen a number of reports looking at spectrum utilization, and very often they point to certain areas of the spectrum that they claim are underutilized, and public safety shows up as one of those. The problem is if you take a sampling of public safety spectrum during normal operations, you'll probably find some white space. The important thing to understand is what goes on when public safety really needs that spectrum, because that's when everybody else wants that spectrum as well. And so one of the points that we've made is there's really not been a comprehensive study of spectrum utilization to look at spectrum utilization in both public safety and non-public safety bands to look at during normal situations and incident and event incident response and event management. So important thing to keep in mind, and that's why I think the real payoff for cognitive applications is going to be more in the performance enhancement area. So where are we headed? Well, I've mentioned this public safety SIG activity, and we're in the process of putting a report together. That is scheduled for completion in January. The SDR forum will actually be meeting in mid-January, and the plan is to present it to the forum for final approval, at which point it can be published. Multi-band capabilities are on the near-term horizon. National Institute of Justice has several activities that are looking at this currently. One is they're working on a multi-band operational pilot using DoD multi-band technology to generate lessons learned. And they also have research grants out and a solicitation on the street for research and development in multi-band SDRs. There's going to be some additional work required in multi-service capabilities to really refine what functions need to be part of a radio. And in this environment, we'll see cognitive applications overlaid in this structure over time. We think SDR provides tremendous technology potential to addressing some of the multi-band interoperability issues. And we also see that downstream multi-service SDR cognitive performance capabilities can really make a significant impact in how emergency communications is done. Thank you.